I've been exposed to all of the ideas that are presently being published around the world. Sometimes one can feel that, having to read so many books can be quite an annoyance, but the books that aren't very good, you find that out fast and you just kind of put them aside. And the books that are good, you really start to read and appreciate. And amongst these good books, there are some really fabulous things that people are saying, or at least the way they are expressing it. And because of that, I came up with the theme of the lecture of today called The Little Things. And the reason I came up with this lecture called The Little Things is because it's sometimes just a phrase or just a small expression, the way something is explained, that makes it just so pleasant to read. And one can just get such a nice, interesting way of just appreciating the world when people just express things in a very, very, very wonderful way. Maybe even something that you've heard about many times, maybe even something that you've thought about many times, but when it's just explained in a certain way, it catches your attention. It captures your interests in a unique manner. So I've seen this happen many times. I've seen that situations which ordinarily you would be very bored in, or sometimes you're doing something which is not very exciting. But in the middle of this, when your consciousness is a little bit distracted, some small thing can come into your vision and just change the way you see everything. It can be a small act of kindness. It can be sometimes just a small act of concern or appreciation of what you are. Sometimes it can even be something where somebody shows you a mirror of yourself in a way which is very enlightening. I have seen that it's these little things which have the greatest effect upon me, not necessarily big things. And then when I think about what is a big thing in life, what is a really significant big event, I start to question that. Often, it is made of many little things. Let's take a book, because we started off talking about books. Let's take a book, for example, and analyze what is a book. A book is, after all, a series of small letters put together into words, put together into paragraphs and sentences and concepts. We feel that a book is presenting an overall picture of things. Yet, it is not the book itself which gives us an impression, but it's the flow of how things are said, it's what's being said, it's the little details that come one after another. Now, when I have to review these books, I have to make sure that, first of all, I like the whole concept, I like the author, I like the way it's expressed, I like the specific things which are being said, but it has to be consistent throughout. I'll give you an example of how a book can be really good at one point and all of a sudden bomb out. There was one book by one lady, and it was a very interesting thing she was describing. So for 2/3 of the book, it was a really wonderful explanation, very clear, very practical, very useful. But then in the last part of the book, her solution to everything that she had analyzed was to simply be totally devoted to Jesus Christ and the church and to just become a true believer. Now, it's not that I'm against what she said or I have some prejudice against it, not at all. But as a reader, I felt betrayed that here was a person who so carefully analyzed the situation, so carefully presented a concept, gave such good clear, comprehensive understanding that everybody could accept. And then at the end, narrowed down her audience to those who could possibly accept her conclusion. So as a reader, I felt betrayed. I felt that here I've been led along all this way, appreciating so much everything that was said and expecting to have a solution or some kind of suggestion, which would also be good for me as all this analysis was. And then I was hit with something that just didn't resonate with me. And then I started to appreciate how fickle my appreciation was, how flimsy it was on a certain level. It was like, yes, I appreciate that sentence. And yes, I appreciate that sentence. And yes, I really like the way that word was used. And yes, for some time it was like this. And then all of a sudden, a sentence appeared which just said, no, no, how can you say that? My mind immediately said, okay, maybe your conclusion works for you. I have no doubt it works for you, actually. But why are you placing it to me as the solution for all my problems? And then I thought, well, it seems that this author doesn't really care about how I would react to it. She is very convinced that what she is saying is right, and either we accept it or not. Fair enough, but I reject this book. I put it on my X list. And then I started really considering this business about my appreciation. I spoke of it as fickle, and that's a very good word. It means it's not steady. It transforms according to the stimulus that comes to me moment by moment. Now that is a very important point when it comes to human relationships and love. Because here we start to see the power of little things. You know, there's another book that I gave a thumbs up for, very good book, about divorce, how to deal with divorce. It was a fabulous book from all points of view. And one of the more interesting aspects was, at one point, a discussion about love, that people who divorce may still, usually they do, if they ever loved each other, they still love each other. It's just that they can't tolerate being together. Now, that's very interesting. You can love somebody and not want to be with them. Now, everybody understands love is a big thing. Love is an all-encompassing kind of package that it has a great impact on us. Yet, it was those little things, that series of little things, which built up to a point where somebody said, I can no longer be with you. Some of these books that I'm reviewing are very beautifully made. I mean, a lot of them are horrible because of the typography it seems to be made by children. But a few of them are very beautifully made. Just for a second to critique the ones that are not nicely made. They don't seem to understand that you can't keep changing type sizes. You can't change the type styles. You can't just create all this change on your own thinking that it looks good. As a reader, I expect consistency. I'm reading words and concepts. I don't care if the style of the type is changing. What would that mean to me? All it says to me is the person who made this book does not know what they're doing. Creating different kinds of formatting, supposedly to catch my eye, but I'm interested in what's being said, not all of this formatting, which is simply diverting me from the message. So a well-designed book takes my interest at heart, not the idea of the people who create it. And what's the most important thing for me? That I can easily and pleasantly accept the information that's being given to me. Now, it's a little thing, isn't it? The type style. It's a little thing, changing type style from one paragraph to the next. It's a little thing, but it has such an incredible impact upon me, upon my consciousness. Let's say I'm speaking to you now, and I'm speaking in a very, shall we say, sophisticated way. I'm not speaking in a colloquial way. I'm not speaking in a common way. I'm talking in terms which are universally acceptable amongst people who think. But if I were to change my mood suddenly in the middle of this talk, for example, if I were to be upset with something and I was to use the phrase, "Hey man, you can stick that up your rear end," it would totally transform everything, your consciousness, the way you are accepting what is being said. As soon as I said that, immediately there was a conflict of energy, a conflict between the expected process of explanation and what was expected to be heard, the way it was expected to be heard, and what actually came to me. Now, as far as the bigger thing, the concept itself, all I was really saying was, "I don't like what you did." But the way I said it, a little thing, the words I chose, a little thing, became very big in their effect. Consider the effect, again, back into loving relationships, like in a marriage or something like that, where you have long-term committed relationships, long-term committed interaction. But at one point, there is just like the look with the slitted eyes where the knives are coming out. It's a little look, but it has such a power to it. Let's go back to the divorce thing. A divorce doesn't take place because of one sudden event all of a sudden, unless it's something really radical like running off with another person or something like that. It's usually a combination of very little small events that are building up into a pattern. Patterns are made of many little things together in a systematic and a way which is continuing the pattern, which is building on the pattern. And people who are finding their marriages becoming harder and harder are usually seeing it from the point of view of this little thing, that little thing. And it's just building up to where at one point one says, "Why am I doing this?" And so therefore, amongst those who know how to maintain a proper relationship, they know that when things start to rub the wrong way, one has to discuss it openly, without fear. One has to express how that is creating an effect upon us. A lot of people walk around with t-shirts with "victim" written on them. And when somebody says something or does something which is agitating us, we simply accept it because we're the victim. And so the victim accepts again and again and again because the victim thinks they deserve it. And I'm sure everybody has some experience of this in their lives. So it builds up and it builds up. More and more of these experiences build up. And it's creating a burden upon us. It's creating a weight upon us where our self-esteem, our self-integrity is being strangled. And at one point, this continuous summing of all of these little things that I accepted become a huge weight that cause us to say, "No more." So what do you do when you get to no more? Well, some people just close off completely and become like rocks or stones. Some people just run away and disappear, leaving everybody bewildered. What happened? Some people get physically sick and collapse or create such cancer or such kinds of disturbances that they just die. They exit by disease. Other people get furious and angry and smash things and throw things. There is no good way out of being strangled by what you allowed others to do to you, the victim. There's no good way out of it. As soon as you get yourself into such a situation, it just builds up and up and up. It's guaranteed failure. Why? Because you didn't respect the little things. You didn't respect the little thing, how you felt when something was done to you, or how you felt when you did something. Therefore, when there is that love between people, there is also the responsibility to express when something is done or said, or some situation arises which makes you feel uncomfortable. Now, I am not saying that you have to spend your life controlling others at every moment. Sometimes you can let things slide. But in important relationships, it's your responsibility for maintaining the relationship to express how you feel when a certain pattern emerges that is causing you difficulty. It's important because it maintains the health of that relationship to have this interaction between each other. That is, of course, a very important part of trust and respect. To be able to have the courage to say, wait a minute, I don't like that. That was not right. That was very improper. And to talk about it. Usually when people get to the point where they're having so many difficulties that they're thinking about a divorce or they go to a marriage counselor or something, it's because they didn't do preventative maintenance in their relationship up to the point where it started getting so bad they needed external action. And not doing it means you don't have enough respect for your partner. You don't have enough respect for their love. You don't have enough respect for their capacity to reciprocate with you. So life is a series of compromises where you may not get everything you want, but at least you can get what you need. You may not marry the prince of your dreams or the princess of your dreams, but you may have a good, loving, solid relationship that supports you and nurtures you throughout your life. Now, here's another little thing. Expectations. What did you expect? It's a little thing. It's just a little mood. It's a little attitude. A little expectation as a thought. What did you expect when you got married? Or what did you expect when you got into this relationship? It's a little thing, this expectation. It can even be one sentence. I expect happiness for the rest of my life. There may be other forms of expression of an expectation. That's just one example. But it's a little thing. It's just like a sentence. It's just like a thought. It's a feeling of an expectation. Such a little thing. Yet every time something happens which is contrary to your expectation, it challenges you in some way or another. You know, we used to say, everything is based upon desire. And in fact, it's really so. Isn't an expectation nothing but a desire? What I wished it to be? And one speaks about false desires or desires which are illusory as the root cause of all difficulty in life. And isn't a false expectation one of those things? It's a little thing. Let's talk about another little thing, a positive little thing, a positive little thing that can transform your whole life. Let's say you're having a really bad day. And who hasn't had a really bad day at one point or another? I remember some years ago, you might remember, I had a lot of bad days. I mean, really going through intensely heart-wrenching situations where relationships were being torn apart, deep connections were being ripped apart. And yet, I would meet, I don't know how, people on the street or somewhere in an office who would just say some small thing, maybe a phrase, maybe a sentence, maybe a look, maybe an act of love, a small one, which changed my whole point of view. I have seen that just a word of kindness, an act of kindness, can transform even a very difficult situation. I remember once in Mayapur, there was a riot about to start between the Bengali devotees and the Western devotees. And I wasn't aware of it, of the capacity to do it. It wasn't like I did something conscious, but I just went down right in the middle of that riot, and I just asked, why is this happening to the Bengali devotees? I listened to what they said. I understood it immediately. I turned to the Western devotee who was making the difficulty. I said one sentence to them. Immediately, the riot was finished. I'm not saying this to glorify myself. I'm not saying this to say this is how you quell riots in all situations. I'm saying at that particular moment in time, that small act of understanding what it was about was enough to calm down the tensions. How many times has conflict arisen simply because we haven't taken the trouble to try to understand why it's there? Understanding, in fact, in reality, exactly why something is happening is something which can completely diffuse your own anger, your own resentment, your own fear. Back to relationships. Again, it's a little thing. But let's say you're thinking everything's okay. So your partner expresses something at you with such an energy. What do you do? What is the usual response? The usual response is, well, same to you, buddy. And what is the little thing that would just diffuse the whole situation? Oh, my goodness, I'm sorry you feel like this. I'm sorry what I did. I don't know what it is. Please tell me. I need to understand. The other person is saying, I'm mad, I'm angry, I'm upset. I may not even know why, but all I know is that you're the target of my emotion. I'm venting on you. And if I were to respond to that by saying, well, you have no right to vent on me. You have to always treat me properly because that's my expectation. It will have a negative effect. And if instead I hear what's coming at me and I don't allow my pride or my egoism to say, boy, are you a rascal. I simply say, why? Just the act of trying to understand why is often all that anyone really wants. That is why understanding others is so much more important than trying to be understood. Often people don't know how to express their needs. Often people don't know how to express because they've allowed themselves to be victims and they just explode at one point. At that point, the only solution is to just back off and just absorb what really is being said here between the lines. Sometimes people in the HariMedia.net forums ask, why is this Hari allowing all this negative thing about him to appear in these forums? Why does he allow it? Well, first of all, in my defense, I would like to say that at a certain point when it becomes ridiculous, I stop it. But another thing is there's not that much of it, but there's a good reason for it. First of all, it's not that these things aren't thought. It's not that these things aren't discussed amongst other people. And if I just blindfold myself by blindfolding the forums, it doesn't really change the reality of the world. And by discussing things openly and honestly, there's a chance, even if it's a small chance, that things can be resolved in the people who feel so upset about the world or feel upset about me. I don't become better or worse if you think I'm better or worse. I become better when I think I am better. When I feel I'm a good person, when I feel to be of service to others, when I feel love for others and the desire to understand others, this is what makes me better. And to accept that I am not a good person or therefore not love me because I'm not a good person, this is self-destructive. simply by my keeping my vision of myself towards the goodness that I am, towards the love that I am, I encourage goodness. I encourage love. I encourage being of service to others, and I become that. Again, it's the little things like how I view myself. It's a little thing. It's little because it's not a big, huge aspect of life. It's not like we see it all the time everywhere. It's not like we're conscious of it. We're discussing it. We're examining it. We're researching it. It's a little thing, but it's so deep and so all-pervasive. It's my consciousness. It's at the root of my essence, of my being. It's my desire. If I desire to see myself as bad, I see myself as bad, and therefore I act in ways which are not perfect for me. It's a whole series of creation. I create myself as a bad person because I'm reinforcing it with my consciousness of being bad. And because I see myself as bad, when I do bad things, I rationalize it. Well, I'm bad. It's okay. Naturally, I do bad things because I'm a bad person. And then I condemn myself for being a bad person. I judge myself very harshly, and I punish myself for being a bad person. But thinking like this doesn't make me become a good person. It doesn't change my consciousness. Rather, it reinforces the negative aspect of my consciousness. Just like we put criminals in jail all together, and in that jail, all the criminals reinforce their criminal mentality because they're surrounded by the criminal mentality. And the only way a reformation can take place is when a criminal understands, if I get caught, not if I do bad, if I get caught, I go to jail. If I go to jail, I have to be in this lousy situation again. Therefore, I shall not get caught. How one deals with not getting caught is individual. Being put in jail does not make one better. Even Shukadeva Goswami talked about this with Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit said, why is it, though, even that criminals are punished again and again, yet as soon as they get away from the punishment, they do the same thing over again? And the obvious natural answer is because their consciousness has not changed, has not transformed. And what is the solution? To transform the consciousness with this light, with this brilliant cleansing of knowledge, this brilliant cleansing of consciousness transformation. Now, many people have chanted mantras, many people have performed austerities, many people have done many things to transform their consciousness, yet they still think of themselves as bad, they still think what they do is bad, and they still have a negative conception of themselves, which keeps them in the association of and in the prison of negativity. The illusion is that I am bad. Now, that is an illusion because I am spirit essence. I cannot be bad. I am pure good, because that's the definition of the spirit essence. I am bad, mea culpa, I am evil, I am wrong, I need punishment, so on. This is an illusion which destroys the capacity to be good. It destroys the capacity to develop that love, to express that love that one is. If at least one says, I am good, I am love, I am of service, one may think that this is not true because I don't feel good, I don't feel love, I don't feel of service. But at least thinking that way is not an illusion. You think you are bad because you feel that you are bad, but that is illusion because you can never be bad. You may act in some way that is not up to your standards of how you should be, but you are never bad. Now, if you want to be truthful, if you want to be honest, if you want to be without the illusion of this material world, then you should understand you are good, you are pure. You are spirit. You are love. Because that is truth. And when your consciousness is focused on what you are, the goodness of you, that goodness, that love, that purity pervades through your consciousness and transforms utterly and totally everything about your life. Now, that's a little thing. It's just simply transforming your mantra about yourself. Instead of chanting, I am bad, I am bad, 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 I am, you're chanting, I am good, 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 I am. And when you have that kind of consciousness of the truth, of the reality of what you are, then you start to again connect in all kinds of beautiful ways to all that loving energy which is all around you, and you attract it to you. So having this proper conception about yourself, not being in this illusion about what you are as bad, transforms your whole life. Again, it's a little thing. It's a small thing, but it has such an incredibly powerful impact. Transformation is a series of little steps, little decisions, little changes. It's not something that happens one moment to the next. Now, these little steps may happen very quickly, but still you have to go through these little steps. And don't disrespect these little transformations. Because when the soul, when the spirit, when the essence affirms its spirituality, it declares its spirituality, it attracts that spirituality from all directions. And don't disrespect the little things you say to others, because those little things can have a huge impact. There can be a huge impact on a person's life when you simply appreciate what they did, or appreciate what they said, or you just appreciate them with a few words of appreciation. All day long, everybody goes through life not being appreciated. And when you cut that cycle and appreciate others, they become so grateful to you. And when you go through your day, you go through your life consciously appreciating others, consciously appreciating the gifts that you have, you consciously start appreciating yourself because you're such a good person who appreciates others. Let's say you don't appreciate other people ever. You'll not appreciate yourself because your higher self knows that the spiritual essence you are appreciates by nature. And those who don't appreciate themselves can't appreciate others either. So how do you break the cycle? You simply, consciously appreciate nature. You appreciate other beings. You appreciate the cat or dog who loves you. You appreciate your parents. You appreciate your partners. And just understand, others may not appreciate you or may not appreciate anyone. That does not stop you from appreciating them. And when you feel like that, you will appreciate yourself for being so good. This is the divine quality, because God and the divine beings always appreciate us no matter what. And when we develop that divine quality of appreciating others, we become divine. Again, we allow ourselves to manifest our divinity simply by appreciating others. This is a conscious endeavor, a conscious act of love. So I hope in this lecture we have somehow or another clarified, at least to some degree, about the little things. And at this point, I'd like to take a break. And when we come back, if there are any questions, that'll be fine. We can do meditation about appreciation and about acceptance. The first question, you've mentioned such a thing as expectations. Can you please give some practical recommendation on how to prevent this thing from ruining the relationships? Well, now I can't say, I mean, of course I could say, but it wouldn't make much sense. I shouldn't say, let's put it this way, that you shouldn't have expectations. I mean, after all, human beings have expectations. We can also call these expectations hopes. We have hopes. We have desires. We have wishes about the way things should be. We have a plan. We have a goal. Now, here's an interesting sequence of things that might help you. If we're talking about expectations in the sense of hope, then let's try these principles to assist us. Number one, don't make up your mind in advance about where you are going. Now, I know that's not very practical, like when you want to go to the store to buy food. You have it made up in your mind in advance. I'm going to go to that store, buy this, then I'm going to go to that store and buy that. We're not talking about such a journey. But if you enter into a relationship, if you don't have your mind made up, meaning, in other words, you're not fixed in your consciousness about what this relationship is going to be, but rather you flow into it with certain, parameters in your mind about how you're going to act. You're going to try to be open to the other person, appreciate, understand, respect. You're going to do the very best you can. These are the parameters in which you enter a relationship. Yet at the same time, you're not going to simply try to understand the other and not try to be understood, like we spoke before about how you have to stand up for yourself by expressing it when something is wrong. Now, by understanding another person, for example, you may find out about the other person things which you didn't know before you entered into the relationship. And when that happens, you're going to have to adjust the way you act or communicate or the demands or expectations you may feel. So if you have your mind made up before you enter into a course of action about where you are going, where you are headed, you're going to be inflexible. And this inflexibility is going to close off your openness. Now, you can hope that you're going to have a loving, fun relationship. But to get to that, you have to enter into it with an open mind, without having it fixed and rigid what that relationship is, because a relationship is an organic, growing, and transforming thing. And don't put a time frame to anything that you're doing. Don't say, I expect within this period of time my relationship should be fine. I expect within this period of time I should have children. I expect within this period of time I should have a certain amount of money or anything like that, a house. Don't use time as a way to restrict your relationship. Don't bind it by time. Don't bind it by a rigid idea of what it is. But let it grow. These are very important principles. And at the same time, if you are more psychic, more in connection with the energy of the existence around you, you can every morning meditate and ask the Supreme or ask your guides, what should I expect? What challenges should I expect today? How will today go? Try not to see life as a linear process going from point A to point B to point C, because it's a very multidimensional process where things affect each other in ways which we could not possibly predict. As soon as you cause some kind of a limitation to take place, an expectation of time or of results or of demands will limit the possibility of growth, and you don't want to limit possibilities, because that is the surefire way to make stress. It's just as if somebody, I know this is especially sensitive to women, maybe your feet are big as you're growing up, so you purposefully wear smaller shoes to limit, you think, the growth of your feet to stop them from growing because they're jammed into these shoes. Now, of course, you can do that. I mean, it is possible, I suppose, to limit the growth of a part of your body by restricting it, but it creates enormous tension and stress and disturbance in your life. Now, I think that's fairly practical. Now, I'm not sure if the person who asked the question thinks that is practical enough. So, if not, ask another question. And I think my answers have also answered the question about the fact that being understood by your partner in relationship is also important, of course. That's why when you feel disturbed or you feel a little bit, shall we say, your integrity has been questioned in a relationship, that you have to express it. And when you express it, that is your way of being understood or calling out that it's time for the other to understand you. So therefore, it's extremely important that you not only know how to demand to be understood, but you are ready at any moment when you have to, or at any moment or all moments, to understand others. People who understand others well are more likely to get a reciprocating relationship with others who are willing to understand them. They feel that it's a more give and take. Now, not having expectations in relationships, which I have then explained as not limiting these relationships, is very similar to not trying to define these relationships, because definitions limit, but rather to leave them open and forever organic and growing, because they become more exciting that way too. Yet at the same time, that does not mean that you don't observe those things in yourself that cause difficulty to others and avoid doing them. You have to, of course, act within the acceptable frame of action in relationship to others. You can't step outside the acceptable frame of action and expect that love alone is going to smooth over this stepping outside. For example, if someone in the relationship smokes, and the other doesn't, and the one who smokes knows that doing it in front of the other will cause disturbance and does it anyway, it's not that not doing it is a limitation. It's that not doing it is common courtesy. So you may not define your relationship by limiting it into a rigid way of understanding, but you may limit the acceptable actions that you can take place. Just like when we go and visit my parents, for instance, they know that we're vegetarians, so they never have any of the meat around that they eat when we're there, because they respect our sensibility. That's part of relationship. That's not a limitation. That's not limiting. That's a positive aspect of it, to act compatibly. So it's part of the definition of a relationship to work in always required, to always maintain a compromise, always maintain compatibility between the people who desire the relationship. Now, let's say you're in a relationship which is abusive. Let's say you are being abused by someone else in the relationship in some form or another, maybe less, maybe more. And you may try in various ways to correct this. You may express your frustration. You may attempt to make a transformation in that abusive behavior. But you also have to leave yourself a door to get out of such a relationship if it doesn't change in a certain period of time. And at one point it may be so disturbing to you that you're going to have to say, I'm very near the end of my patience, and if something doesn't change soon or something like that, I'm going to have to do something about this. So in this particular case, a time frame, a limitation, a demand for change is acceptable because you are not a victim. You are as an equal partner in the relationship. And at one point you may say, no more. Just make sure that you're not in this situation where it has become intolerable because you have neglected to make adjustments, to make compromises, to express yourself up to that point. But ultimately, even if you have neglected to act in the proper way, still, if you find yourself in an impossible situation, you still have to get out. But learn from the mistake, and next time, do it better. Then there's a question. If people are very heavy on themselves and ask too much of themselves, then they may fall into the trap of demanding too much, asking too much from other people, and even developing the trait of not being able to tolerate weakness. It seems to me that this heaviness upon the self, these demands upon the self, these expectations upon the self, this judging and condemning the self when these are not met, these things are as dangerous as when you do it to others or when others are doing it to you. Because when you manifest such a demand upon yourself and you express that to others as if everyone should think like you, you are limiting relationships. You are creating disturbances in any harmony you could have in the relationship. So this is also a problem. Here's another question. What do I think about crayon and Merkaba? We spoke about this a few weeks ago when I said I had a positive feeling about these personalities and these energies which were being described by them. And more than that, I don't think so much. I just feel it's very positive and many good things are there. Not that I would agree with everything, but, you know, that's just me. And if you like this, if you feel this is an encouraging thing for you, if it's helping you, if it's assisting you in your development now, then that's quite fine. I mean, it depends on you, how it harmonizes with you. But I think there's, of course, good things in it. And in fact, believe it or not, some of the points I just made were from notes which I had taken from one of the crayon transmissions. So it's not that I don't use this information. It's just that I don't always tell you, hey, I got that from there. And actually, I edited out one of the points. So I accepted that which made sense to me and I understood. And I didn't repeat that which I didn't understand or didn't really fit in. So I'm using what is useful for me from these things, which is, I suppose, the best way to live your life. Somebody else may say, well, then you're not being true to the teacher. You have to accept everything. Otherwise, you're picking and choosing. But as far as I'm concerned, it's more important that I'm true to myself than I'm true to somebody else. I'm not exactly sure what it means, but I'll repeat it as best I can. It seems that the powerful methods that you teach us are meant only for some specific ways to help others or eliminate negativity. Does it mean that we cannot use them in our daily life for our personal goals? I mean, of course you can. I would be the last person to try to restrict you as far as what you can use in your life. I mean, anything that you find is a benefit, anything you find is useful in your own life for your own benefit, of course you can use. That's the whole point of what I'm saying here. Use what you can, use what you want, use what you feel good about in the best way you can. But I'm not exactly sure if that was actually the question, but that's how I read it. And then I have another question, which is, on the surface, it seems to be a ridiculous question. Yet a little bit deeper, it's actually a very interesting question. The question is it possible that some spirit can enter the forms of deities, and people who worship may be deluded by those spirits instead of the deities. Now, I can understand that immediately many people would say, oh, that's ridiculous. Oh, that's a silly question. But actually, when you think about it a little bit, this has many levels to it, which are very interesting from a mystical point of view. Let's say you're at the stage where you're installing the deity, where you're calling down the deity to this particular form, and the person who's calling down, or the persons who are calling down the deity, have a particular energy about them, have a particular mood about them, or demand about them, that actually calls down some other kind of entity that they really think the deity would represent. In that case, those personalities do not really know, they do not really have a connection to the particular deity they think they are calling down. Now, I am assuming that the deity in question here is supposed to be a form of the divine. Now, that is why the literatures have procedures for installing deities to make sure that the right personality comes down. It's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons. For those who are not capable of connecting, not capable of calling the deity down themselves, the procedures, the ways in which things are done, guarantees and safeguards that Radha and Krishna or Gaura and Nitai will enter into these deities, or will manifest their energy through these deities. Or actually, the best way to express it, will manifest themselves as the deities. Now, let's examine the situation. Let's say you have actually Gaura and Nitai standing on the altar, and somebody who's got a completely strange consciousness and mentality standing before them. Is it possible that Gaura and Nitai will reciprocate with these strange personalities according to the mentality of the strange personalities? In other words, in some deluded manner, in some illusory manner. Is it possible? I would say that's highly unlikely. If you think then that, well, maybe that person sitting in front of Gaura and Nitai and connecting to some negative entity somewhere, I would say that's possible. That's in the realm of possibility, but it's not usually what happens. It's not very likely. Now let's turn that around. Let's turn that around and let's then express it the other way. Let's express it from the point of view that the deity is not who it was supposed to be, for instance. Let's say it's somebody else there, and those people who brought that deity there stand before the deity. Well, those people aren't deluded either, because they're the ones who call down that personality that they are relating to. So they're getting exactly what they asked for. So that's not delusion. However, the delusion, if there's some, would be that they think the name of that personality they are relating to is the name normally associated with that particular deity. Then you might have the situation where such persons were people who are not deluded. In other words, start all over again. You might have the situation where somebody comes into a temple expecting the deity to be what normally that deity would be, but the deity energy is actually someone else. Let's talk about that situation. Well, believe it or not, I have been in that situation, and I'll tell you what my experience of it was. I have gone into temples where the people who worship that particular deity have a totally different understanding of that deity than I do. And the most interesting thing about this is that the deity always, I mean always, without exception, expresses to me a lamentation that this is happening. I went into a Buddhist temple once. I'm not going to tell you where because somebody might be listening. And everybody had been meditating there before their deity. I looked at the deity and the deity told me, finally, somebody notices me. For the people who meditated there, the deity was just a statue who represented something that they abstractly don't meditate on or meditate on. It depends on their mood. But they don't pay attention. The deity is not the center. The deity is not a focus of their attention. They're simply meditating neutrally. And I felt the most amazing appreciation from that deity, that I actually cared about the deity, as a personality. And there was immediately a reciprocation. I thought it was wonderful. And then the mood of the meditation, because I did the meditation after, the mood of the meditation was fabulous. It was so powerful, I couldn't believe it. So the person who brought us to this temple was one of the leaders of the temple, not exactly of the temple, but of the group. And I said, you know, because that person also experienced the power of the meditation, unusually powerful. I said, you know, maybe if you paid more attention to this deity, the deity would bless you with more power rather than ignoring the deity and trying to struggle so hard. Maybe there's some gift you can get here. Then I went to another temple, a place where one of my relatives is connected. And they had a deity of Goddess Kali, a particular form of Goddess Kali. So I go to see that deity. So I go and I offer some love and respect and appreciation for this deity, because after all, deities, they do such a wonderful service for people. They help people, they offer love to people, they try to get people to understand higher things and evolve. Deities are very nice. And that deity also said to me, finally, somebody appreciates me for what I'm here for. So I've become convinced that, sure, people can relate to deities just the way they want to. And the deity, of course, will, that is the way they create it. The people create it. So the deity doesn't interfere with it because it's what they want, the people. But because I was not having the same expectation as these people, I saw the deity from my own perspective. And the deity reciprocated with me from his or her own perspective. Because I immediately accepted the deity for what the deity is, not what they tried to make the deity be. And that created the immediate connection to the essence, to the energy of that personality. And that's possible because you can connect to these deities at any moment, any instant in time. Now, somebody's asking about the Lord. Let's say you have Radha and Krishna. Can Radha and Krishna leave the deities and then some other personality enters that form? Is it possible? But that's the same question and the same answer is given. Those persons who connect to other kinds of energies because of their desire, because of their consciousness, can certainly connect to other kinds of energies. Doesn't mean Radha and Krishna went away for a picnic. It's a question of how you connect. It's like a telephone. You can dial all kinds of things. I'm not saying the deity is a telephone. But I'm saying that your consciousness, the way you connect, is as important as the deity you have there. Yet you may have the situation of a person who doesn't know how to contact, is not interested in any particular personality or anything, doesn't even know, but comes before Gornatai and feels Gornatai. Because they don't try to change that. They just accept whatever's there. They feel Gornatai. That is also possible, and that is the wonderful thing about deities. Such a neutral person, if going before a deity whose real form has been clouded by all of these desires of some other kind of energy, will feel the other kind of energy. Because there's nothing to transform their feeling. They don't have anything else to connect to. They just feel the way everybody else feels. So that's not good either. Then again, it might be exactly what they want. So I can't say if it's good or bad. Now, the pictures of the deities. Can it give the same energy like the deities? It depends, again, on your capacity to connect with that particular form, whether it be a picture or a statue or a fire yajna. It's your capacity to reach through and connect to the energy of that particular personality. So I have answered the questions, at least the best I can, of all of the personalities who have asked them in these messages. And now what I want to do is get to the meditation and see if we can increase our capacity to harmonize with our spiritual energy in this meditation. And this meditation will be about our feeling our goodness, affirming that goodness, accepting ourselves in that way, and establishing ourselves on a positive course of truthful appreciation of what we are.